The news comes on the heels of his first and only 20-win season. The 39-year-old was 270 and 153 with a 3.68 ERA in 18 seasons in the majors. He becomes the first pitcher to retire after a 20-win season since Hall of Famer Sandy Koufax in 1966. Control of the New York Yankees is now in the hands of Hal Steinbrenner. The Major League Baseball owners today approved the shift of control of the team from George Steinbrenner to his son Hal, who's been running the franchise with his brother Hank since last fall. Cincinnati and Pittsburgh will square off tonight in the Thursday NFL game. The Steelers are coming off an 11-10 win over San Diego, while the Bengals played a 13-13 tie with Philadelphia. The University of Illinois men's basketball team is in Nashville tonight to take on Vanderbilt in college basketball action. Illinois is hoping for a win, which would leave the team with a 2-0 record this season. Guard Trent Meacham is leading the Illini so far with 16 points a game. The Illini women improved to 3-0 last night with a win over Missouri 65-55 at Assembly Hall. Next up, Temple on Sunday. And the Blackhawks tonight will look to win three straight on the road for just the third time in the last four seasons. To accomplish that feat, Chicago must earn a rare victory in Dallas. The Hawks are 1-8-2 with a tie in Dallas since the start of the 2001-2002 season. That's sports.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from the Meredith Foundation, dedicated to supporting the musical arts in performance and presentation.
It's 2:42. It's been known for a time that the two men at the helm of the Illinois State Senate would be stepping down in January, but it wasn't until last night that senators decided who will take over those positions. Amanda Vinicky reports on who they are and what changes they may bring.
The retirement announcement by Senate President Emil Jones came in mid-August, and since then, Senate Democrats have been campaigning, lobbying, and negotiating amongst themselves. Senator Don A. Trotter was only half-joking back then when he said it seemed like every Democrat in the chamber was in the running.
I mean, there's 37 members, and the last I counted, there's probably about 36 of them that would like to have the position. And that one person that says they don't want it is probably lying. Right. So we'll see.
In the end, John Cullerton, a frontrunner from the beginning, won. The months of negotiations ended after Democrats shut themselves in a private room at a Springfield hotel as reporters, lobbyists, and other onlookers waited in the hallway and bar right outside. A couple of hours and two ballots later, Cullerton emerged the winner.
It was very contentious for the last few months, but everybody came together and it's been really a great, humbling feeling.
But Cullerton, a partner at a Chicago law firm who lives on the city's north side, has been in the legislature long enough to know what problems he's taking on. He's been in the Illinois General Assembly since 1979. He'll be leading the Senate as it takes on policy issues, namely dealing with a deficit budget and a flailing economy. Cullerton also says his top legislative priority will be propping up the economy by passing a statewide infrastructure program. But in order to even get to that and other matters, there's the issue of the fighting that's engulfed state government.
We have a situation where the Speaker and the Governor are not getting along, where we've had problems between the Senate and the House. We want to change that. We want to. I think I'm uniquely qualified. I do get along with the Speaker. I've known him for many years. The Governor lives two blocks from me, and so we have been friends for many years. We are going to try to bring those two guys together, and if I can get the Speaker and the Governor together, then I'm going to go to the Middle East and solve that crisis.
It's a different tactic than President Jones has taken. Jones has been Governor Rod Blagojevich's closest ally and has stuck by Blagojevich even, some say, to the detriment of his own members. It's put Jones at odds with them lately and is part of the reason Democrats like Mike Jacobs of Moline say they elected Cullerton.
I think we're going to start working as a cooperative body, and I hope the governor takes this as an opportunity to grow up a little bit and work with the legislative chambers and move Illinois forward, because the people of Illinois can't afford what we've had for the last couple of years.
Democrats aren't alone in their professed desire for cooperation.
I think taxpayers want to see the parties cooperating and pulling together to make things move forward in the state, and that's the kind of leader I intend to be.
That's Christine Redonio of Lamont, the new Senate minority leader. Republicans also elected Redonio in a closed-door meeting, theirs at a Springfield country club, after intra-caucus campaigning of their own. The position opened up when Frank Watson of Greenville announced he would no longer serve so he could recover from a stroke he had in October. The minority Redonio will lead is a small one. Democrats have enough seats that if they stick together, they can pass legislation without the Republicans.
Our caucus is going to be about the issues that bring us together and that the taxpayers are interested in, and that is fiscal issues and taxes.
When she replaces Watson, Redonio will become the first woman to hold one of the General Assembly's top four leadership posts. She says it's exciting to be a little part of history. But in losing Watson, there's no longer any legislative leader from downstate Illinois. House Republicans reelected Tom Cross of Oswego as their leader, and House Speaker Mike Madigan of Chicago isn't going anywhere, meaning all four legislative leaders are from Chicago or are suburbanites. And in losing Jones, who is black, as Senate president, a minority is no longer a legislative leader. That transfer of power won't officially take place until the new General Assembly's sworn in this January. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Unity was a major theme in this year's election. Democrats used unity as a vehicle to pick up a number of congressional seats, House and Senate, across the country. The party hasn't had this much representation in Washington in more than a decade. Nevertheless, Democrats have a long history of not seeing eye to eye with their fellow party members. That's especially true for two neighboring Democrats from the far south side of Chicago who now find themselves sitting side by side in the House of Representatives. Tony Arnold reports.
There's no denying the rich history of Illinois politics or the rivalries that come out of it. Some have it down to an art. You're probably familiar with the most notorious, especially those that occur among fellow Democrats. There's the governor and the Illinois Speaker of the House, who've done a lot of their fighting through the press.
Maybe he is delusional.
Then there's the small team of Cook County commissioners, who've gone toe-to-toe with the board president. But there are other rivalries that are tangible, if not quite as flashy. Two in particular are heading to a new arena, which raises the stakes for their cause.
Debbie Halverson, Congresswoman-elect, 11th District in Illinois.
Debbie Halverson is a Democratic state senator who was just elected to Congress. She'll be representing a sprawling rural district that includes some of Chicago's far south suburbs, places like Piatone and most of Will County. One key issue there has divided Democrats. That's the building of a new airport.
I believe that if and when an airport is going to be built in Will County, it'll be decided by the FAA, and it should be controlled by Will County.
And therein lies the debate. For at least two decades, there's been talk of constructing an airport near Piatone. Halverson says that's fine, but she wants the Will County government to control the airport.
Do you see you're in a bit better position now to have a little bit more influence, to make sure that Will County has control of this?
Absolutely, I do, sure.
But another group just as adamantly does not favor Will County control. Instead, it's looking for a more public-private partnership. And the leader of that cause is Halverson's soon-to-be fellow House Democrat, Jesse Jackson, Jr. His district butts up against Halverson's. Rick Bryant heads Jackson's airport organization and works on the congressman's staff.
The group that she represents has not ever come up with an airport plan. They've never come up with any financing, and they've not even created an airport commission.
Bryant says, as a state senator, Halverson has dragged her feet on any kind of work needed for the airport. And he doesn't expect much more help from her now.
Congress doesn't build airports either.
Regardless, both Halverson and Jackson are trying to gain influence and move up the political ladder. And as they do so, they become more visible. An example of that is when their rivalry was on display last summer. Illinois officials were gathered for breakfast at the Democratic National Convention. Jackson had the podium where he addressed many of the legendary rivalries in the room.
Acts of reconciliation are all around us, but we don't put them front and center.
And in the middle of it,
Debbie Halverson.
Jackson picked Halverson out of the crowd. She was in the middle of a contentious campaign in a Republican district against Martin Ozinga. And Jackson called for her to come up front.
Where are you?
Where? The two hugged.
Lord knows I want to build an airport in the south suburbs. But make no mistake about it, I want a Democrat in Congress more than I want somebody named Ozinga.
And now that she's a congresswoman,
even gets more interesting.
Paul Green teaches political science at Roosevelt University. He says the hug was nice for the show, but it doesn't change the fact that they have different ideas of how to build and run a major infrastructure project for their region. And Green says there's still a wild card. Jackson is pushing hard for Illinois' vacant Senate seat left open by Barack Obama.
Even with Congressman Jackson hoping to become the U.S. Senator, I'm sure that the Will County people are going to do all they can to prevent that. The last thing they want is him as a senator pushing this kind of deal.
Green says the airport is the driving issue in the south suburbs, which are experiencing rapid growth. And both Halverson and Jackson are in too deep to change their policies toward an airport now.
In many ways, Congressman Jackson has become Captain Ahab and the airport's Moby Dick. I mean, that's his issue. Halverson has been forced to do the same.
Green says he doesn't see an end to the airport battle in sight. And he says there is an irony to the whole feud. He says as the two fight over the best way to run the airport, a lot of people who live in the south suburbs don't want it at all. A grassroots group's gotten together to argue an airport would pave over too much farmland. Green says local resistance makes the airport a tough sell, one made harder by the rivalry of the new congressional neighbors. I'm Tony Arnold.
It's 9 minutes before 3 o'clock. President-elect Barack Obama's January inauguration is a couple of months away. Still, several Chicago companies say they're already seeing signs of what could be a region-wide shortage of coach buses. And they say groups looking to book a bus to take them to D.C. should probably get a move on. Ben Calhoun reports.
It's been well reported that hotel rooms for the January 20th inauguration are already scarce. In fact, lodging in D.C. that week is in such high demand that some people are trying to rent their apartments or houses online for tens of thousands of dollars. Airfares aren't quite so bad, but they're not good. One Chicago travel agent said there's still availability, but flights the day before the inauguration are pretty well booked, especially the cheap seats. Given that, it's understandable that people, especially larger groups, might turn to the trusty old coach bus.
Good afternoon, Pioneer Coach.
Vanessa Berg works at Pioneer Coach in Chicago. She says she's seen a spike in the number of requests the company is getting for inauguration week.
Oh, definitely.
Berg says even with the inauguration still months off, the company is already on its way to scheduling its whole fleet.
I would say right now, out of our 52 coaches, we probably have 8 that would be available to go to the inaugural.
Berg says at this point, it doesn't just look like Chicago coach buses are on their way to booking up. She's getting calls from hundreds of miles away.
We're getting requests for quotes as far as St. Louis and Indianapolis because apparently those bus companies are booked.
Another company said they've started getting calls from Michigan where people are having trouble getting buses. One person I talked to said he'd estimate interest in coach buses for that week is 5 to 7 times what it would normally be.
Thank you for calling American Coach Limousine. Calls may be monitored for quality assurance.
Mike Akhtar is at American Coach Limousine in Chicago.
Well, there's definitely a lack of availability starting, I can tell you that.
Akhtar says at this point, he's still got coaches for hire, but people should not procrastinate.
That's the last thing people do worry about is transportation, and they kind of leave. They tend to leave that till the end until they get everything else situated, their plans for the day, how they're going to, you know, if people are coming out of state, you know, from, you know, a group is getting together. They wait until they get all that planned out and do the transportation at the end.
Akhtar says he expects the wave to really hit in the coming weeks. In fact, his company is expecting such a rush that they're holding all their buses that week for regular customers.
Towards the end of this month to beginning of next month, that's when it will start really taking off.
Like others in Chicago, Akhtar says he has no doubt his company's buses will be spoken for come inauguration week. At this point, it's only a question of how soon. I'm Ben Calhoun.
Conservatism is down but not out, says Mike Huckabee.
If we hit the reset button, we can reboot this movement.
The former Arkansas governor and also ran for president has his eye on 2012. In a new book, he takes on the GOP.
People want there to be an effective government, not just one that rhetorically remains pure.
Mike Huckabee later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 4 to 7 p.m.
Let's take a look now at the weather forecast prepared by meteorologist Ed Kieser. His forecast for Illinois and Indiana topped with some weather advisories. A lake effect snow warning in effect for LaPorte and St. Joseph counties in north central Indiana through noon central time, 1 o'clock eastern time tomorrow afternoon. Lake effect snow advisory in effect for Porter County in northwest Indiana through 9 a.m. tomorrow. And for Elkhart, Stark, Marshall, Fulton, and Kosciusko counties in north central Indiana through 1 o'clock eastern time tomorrow afternoon, 12 noon central time tomorrow. That's forecast for the two states. Tonight in Illinois and in southwestern Indiana, mostly cloudy with a few scattered flurries early, then clearing. In northern Indiana, cloudy with snow showers and squalls with locally heavy snowfall likely. Elsewhere in Indiana, cloudy with scattered flurries. Lows ranging from 10 in far northwestern Illinois to 22 in the south and near Lake Michigan. Tomorrow in Illinois and in west central and southern Indiana, mostly sunny. In northern and east central Indiana, mostly cloudy with scattered snow showers and flurries. Highs tomorrow ranging from 28 in the north to 36 in the far south. For Champaign-Urbana tonight, mostly cloudy. There's a chance of a few flurries early, then clearing. Breezy and colder tonight, the low 17, the wind from the northwest at 12 to 24 miles per hour. Tomorrow, look for sunny skies, the high 32, the wind from the northwest to west at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, increasing cloudiness, the low 18. Saturday's forecast, intervals of clouds and sunshine, the high around 40. Saturday night, clear, the low 25. And the outlook for Sunday, mostly sunny and breezy, the high 47.
Earth and sky.
Epsilon Auriga has fascinated astronomers for nearly 200 years.
That's astronomer Robert Stenzel. He's talking about a star system called Epsilon Auriga, 2,000 light years away. Astronomers think the main star in this system is eclipsed every 27 years by something.
We can't seem to pin down what that secondary object really is.
This system gets dimmer for about 2 years out of every 27. That's a long eclipse, and astronomers picture a gas cloud as wide as 1,000 suns orbiting the main star. When the cloud comes between us and the main star, the whole system gets dimmer. Stenzel and other astronomers are excited about the eclipse of Epsilon Auriga in 2009. Over the decades, the star has spent more and more time in eclipse, plus the star's brightness is pulsing more rapidly.
If those two trends are extrapolated a couple of decades out, it means that something accelerating in the system now might go bang in the night.
The bang might come from a smaller object in the Epsilon Auriga system. A planetesimal or chunk of debris might be spiraling toward one of its stars. A collision with lots of fireworks could occur by mid-century. I'm Deborah Bird for Earth and Sky, a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: First National Bank and Trust Company, Clinton; Trainer Grain and Supply Company, Forest; Roach Ag Marketing, Lexington; and Bates Commodities Incorporated, Normal. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible.